Castillo passed along the last of the pictures and the envelope to Delchamp, then looked at Duffy. Duffy locked eyes with him, and Castillo sensed it would not be in his best interests to break the eye contact first. Castillo didn't look away until Muntz touched his arm with the envelope, now again thick with pictures. He took it from Muntz, stood up, and walked to Duffy's desk. He put the envelope on the desk, then walked back to his chair, sat down, and looked at Duffy again.
My gendarmes were manning road checks when the hijos de puta did this to them, Duffy then said. The gendarmeria sometimes sets up road checks at random sites, and sometimes at sites where we have information about where drugs will be coming down the highway. In both cases here, we had had information that drugs would be coming down two particular highways, which happened to be some 70 kilometers apart.
Duffy paused a moment, then continued.
Killing and kidnapping gendarmes is very unusual. Criminals almost never kill members of the gendarmeria, and never before have kidnapped any of them.
Why is that, Commandante? Delchamp asked softly.
Because they know it is unacceptable, Muntz said.
What does that mean,
unacceptable? Castillo demanded. It means the gendarmes will take revenge, Muntz said, killing anyone they suspect may have been involved.
He let that sink in for a moment, then went on.
The gendarmeria operates all over Argentina, very often in remote areas and with very few men. They usually operate in two-man teams and sometimes alone. They are not attacked because the price for doing so is too high. When this happened?
When did this happen? Castillo interrupted. Before or after Timmons was snatched?
A week after Timmons was taken, Muntz said. The day, or the day after, Max found Lorimer in the bushes at Nuestra Pequeña Casa.
The gendarmeria, Colonel, Duffy said, prides itself on always getting its man. It was not wise to do what these hijos de putas did, and I asked myself why these narcos had. The first conclusion obviously to be drawn was that they decided to send the gendarmeria the same kind of message they've been sending your DEA people in Asuncion, that they will not tolerate interference with their business. Then I asked myself why they had suddenly decided to do this. What came to mind there was that they were about to start significantly increasing the flow of product to the point where so much money would be involved that they would think that protecting the shipments was worth the risk of behaving toward the gendarmeria in a manner heretofore considered unacceptable. If this were true, I reasoned, it was possible, even likely, that my men were targeted by the narcos, rather than it being that they simply had stopped the narco truck and that the narcos had resisted. If the latter were the case, then both men would have been killed. No witnesses. Not one of them taken away. That posed a number of questions, including how they had learned, that is, who had told them, where the road checks would be. I had some ideas about that, but nothing that I could prove. The most kind was that the hijos de puta offered the farmhands, the peones in the area, a little gift if they would telephone a number to report where we had set up a road check. Less kind was the possibility that the narcos offered a little gift to the officers of the Policía Federal in the area to do the same thing. But the major question in my mind was what had happened to cause the sudden increase in actions by the hijos de puta that they had to know were not only unacceptable to the gendarmeria but would also call attention to them, which was also not in their best interests. At that point, I remembered hearing some gossip about something interesting that had happened in Uruguay. It sounded incredible, but I decided it was worth looking into. What I had heard was that a drug deal had gone wrong on an estancia in Tacuarembó province in central Uruguay. According to this story, six men, all dressed in black, like characters in a children's movie, had been found shot to death. I thought that checking out the story would be a simple matter. Jose Ordonez is more than a professional associate with whom I have worked closely over the years. As I said, we are dear friends. I thought all I would have to do would be to telephone Jose. Unofficially, of course. I have Jose's private number, and he has mine, and ask him what there was to this incredible story, and also to ask him if he had noticed any sudden increase in the drug shipments into and out of his country. So I called him. When I asked him what had happened in Tacuarembó province, he didn't answer directly. He said that it had been too long since we had seen one another, and that we should really try to have lunch very soon. Well, the very next morning I was on the Buca bus to Montevideo, Duffy went on. Tourist class, as I was paying for it myself. Getting an official authorization to travel to Uruguay is difficult, takes time, and then only results in a voucher for a tourist class seat. Is it that way in the U.S. Army, Colonel? Very much so, Commandante. Getting the U.S. Army to pay for travel is like pulling teeth. That, then, raises the question of who is paying for the helicopter in which you have been flying all over down here? Castillo looked Duffy square in the eyes and said evenly, I have no idea what you're talking about, Commandante. If we are going to work together, Colonel, we are going to have to tell each other the truth. The last three words of the sentence came out, utter the truth. Castillo couldn't restrain a smile. You find that amusing? Duffy asked. Colonel Muntz didn't tell me you were from Brooklyn, Commandante. I don't understand. You have a Brooklyn accent, Commandante. Duffy, visibly annoyed, looked at Muntz, who gestured that he didn't understand, and then turned to Castillo and said, I don't understand either, Carl.
Okay. Delchamp said, Cultural History 101. Pay attention, there will be a pop quiz. Sometime around the time of the potato famine in Ireland, the Catholic Church sent a large number of priests, from Kilkenny, I think, but don't hold me to that, to minister to Irish Catholic immigrants in the New World. Many of them went to Brooklyn and many to New Orleans. Their flocks picked up their accent. Now that I've heard Commandante Duffy speak, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if some of them were sent down here, too.
Now Duffy smiled. On the other hand, Duffy said to Castillo, you sound like a Porteño, Colonel. What did Holy Mother Church in Argentina do? Send Porteño priests to New York? Castillo laughed. Actually, I'm a Texican, Castillo said. A what? A Texican. One whose family came from Mexico a very long time ago, before Texas was a state. My family's from San Antonio. I am a great admirer of the Texas Rangers, Duffy said. I have two ancestors who were Texas Rangers a long time ago.
Sometimes we think of the Colonel as the Lone Ranger, Delchamp said. Can I ask what a Porteño is?
Somebody from Buenos Aires, Alex Darby offered, who speaks with sort of a special cant. And, hijos de puta? Delchamp pursued. Argentina is a society where people like narcos are held in scorn by men, Darby said, chuckling. Hijos de puta is a pejorative.
I believe you would say sons of bitches, Duffy said.
What did you have in mind, Commandante? Castillo asked, when you said, if we are going to work together.
Well, Jose and I had a very nice luncheon in the port restaurant in Montevideo. Do you know it?
Castillo shook his head.
You'll have to try it sometime. It's really excellent if you like meat prepared on a parrilla. It's right across from the Buquebus terminal.
Can we get to the point of this? Castillo asked.
During which, Duffy went on, nodding. Ordonez told me, in confidence, of course, that what really happened at Estancia Shangri-La had nothing to do with narcos.
Would you believe me if I told you I had never heard of Estancia Shangri-La?
No, But I certainly understand why you would profess never to have heard of it. If I may continue?